Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Your future is important. Take time to plan for what can go right. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
To Belfast now, and a landmark ruling. Former British soldier David Holden has been found guilty of the manslaughter of young GAA player Aidan McInnespy almost 35 years ago. He's the first member of the security forces to ever be prosecuted in relation to a Troubles-related legacy case. In finding Holden guilty, Judge Justice O'Hara dismissed his explanation that his wet hands had slipped on a gun when killing Aidan McInnespy, accusing him of giving a deliberately false account. The verdict comes as the British government moves to halt any further legacy cases. Well, our reporter Barry Lenihan has followed this case over the years. He joins us now. And Barry, a highly significant judgment.
Almost 35 years ago, Aidan McInnespy made his way to the Gaelic Grounds, never thinking he was going to die. An innocent man, he posed no threat. The 23-year-old passed the army checkpoint at Auchnacloy in the Tyrone-Monaghan border when he was fatally shot by David Holden. This afternoon here at Laggonside Courthouse, all these years later, David Holden was found guilty of the manslaughter of Aidan McInnespy on the 21st of February 1988. The former Grenadier Guardsman, 18 at the time, 52 now, he had claimed his wet hands had slipped onto the trigger of a heavy machine gun and three shots were accidentally discharged. One ricocheted, killing Mr. McInnespy. The shooting was declared an accident. Today in Belfast, Judge Justice O'Hara was damning. He described Holden's evidence in this trial as, quote, entirely unconvincing, frankly incoherent. He noted how his wet hands explanation changed to a theory during the course of this trial, and the judge dismissed this theory entirely, saying there were, quote, astonishing, remarkable and unbelievable coincidences contained within Holden's version of events, that the court was asked to believe he killed someone by accident, someone he had admitted was the very object of his surveillance. Aidan McInnespy, we'd been told, was a suspected terrorist in the eyes of the British Army. The judge dismissed Holden's claim of poor memory, noting how his assertion was contradicted by the vivid details he purportedly had in critical moments around the killing, and he said the army veteran in his evidence had given, as you said, a deliberately false account of what happened that afternoon. He said he considered him criminally culpable beyond any reasonable doubt, and so guilty.
You've watched this trial, Barry, since it opened in March. What was a critical moment?
One of David Holden's colleagues that day, in his evidence, he said that Holden told him how I squeezed the trigger seconds after the shooting. And Judge O'Hara alluded to this, coupled with other evidence, to lead him to conclude that David Holden deliberately pulled the trigger when killing Aidan McInnespy. He said he accepted Holden's explanation that he thought the gun had been made safe or cocked. However, he added that this assumption should not have been made, and Holden should have appreciated from the moment he pulled the trigger the consequences of his actions. It was the ultimate take no chances situation, he said. And Judge O'Hara also said how he disbelieved other evidence put forward by former members of the British Army.
So, David Holden guilty of the killing of Aidan McInnespy. How did the family react afterwards?
Over 40 family and friends of Aidan McInnespy came to the courthouse here. His brothers sat side by side in the court beside supporters of David Holden, who, like the defendant, wore the colours of their regiment. As the verdict was announced, the family broke into tears and hugged. Holden remained neutral throughout proceedings. The McInnespy family took over an hour to leave the court here as they comprehended the enormity of today's judgment after over three decades of campaigning and coming within a short few weeks of the death of Aidan McInnespy's elderly father, John. Among those here, Aidan's brothers, Vincent and first Sean, and also his sister, Margot.
Can't describe it. It's emotional. After 34 years, you're thinking of Aidan. You're thinking of my mother, Eilish, and Dad, that prayed for this moment and not to be here to enjoy it. Overwhelming. I was the one, the negative one all along, that it was a waste of time, and it was Eilish and the rest that convinced me to keep punting away at it, and I'm delighted that I listened to them, that we got this length.
And after nearly 35 years as well.
35 years. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We were coming hoping to get truth and justice. We got justice today, we haven't got truth. The judge tore Holden's testimony to bits. A couple of years ago when this thing started, Mr. Holden had to sit down with us and told us the truth. That's all we were looking for, was just to hear the truth. We didn't get the truth. We got justice. But we're still, there's a whole lot of unanswered questions out there.
For you, Margot, what's it like?
It's absolutely fantastic. It's a day that I really never thought was going to come. Every time you were going somewhere, it was another brick wall in front of you. You had to get over it and go again and fight. And it's just unbelievable we've got here. Fantastic. I've never seen as many people crying. You know, it's unbelievable. Tears of joy this time.
For the people of the border area as well.
It's a massive for the community as well as the family. We always knew this fight was just wasn't about the family. We knew it was a family circle in general. We also, as one of the priests says to me, Fincy, he says there's a lot on your shoulders, but he says also a lot in the community. This battle just wasn't about ourselves. Yeah. We knew it was about other families and people around the border areas in our own town, but knew what Aidan went through.
Mickey Muldoon from Ochonach Live, from Ahaloo Football Club, where Aidan McInnesby was a member. What happened here today in Belfast, it's hard to put into words, but it's long awaited for the family.
You're just after wiping the tears away from your eyes. This means an awful lot for you.
It does. It means a lot. Aidan was one of my best friends. It's just a relief, and a relief especially for the family. I don't know, I can hardly put it into words, Barry, what's happened here today. I suppose none of us can believe it has really come through. But it gives hope for all the families not stop fighting for the truth and justice.
Yeah, and you can just hear the emotion and the shock, really, I suppose, and the relief in all of those emotions from the McInnesby family and their friends there. And I know they're hoping, Barry, this will spur other families on. But of course, this judgment comes on the same week as British politicians considered an effective amnesty for all Troubles-related killings.
That's it. And this killing caused significant tensions between the Irish and British governments at the time in 1988, partially because the Irish government commissioned its own inquiry, the Crowley Inquiry, into the killing. Now, that report has never been published, but its findings were released under the 30-year rule. And as the case is now over, we can reveal how that report also found how it was difficult to accept David Holden's reported defence, noting also how it constituted too much of a coincidence. But now, perhaps full circle again, fresh fissures between governments, both sides of the Irish Sea, over this killing. The British Veterans Minister, Johnny Mercer, he's been among those to support David Holden in court, while afterwards, the Northern Ireland First Minister designate, Michelle O'Neill, she tweeted how the British government is legislating to stop other families getting justice, and this must be stopped. Now, a spokesperson for the Northern Ireland Veterans Movement, Paul Young, he said he was deeply disappointed by this verdict. It was as a witch hunt continues, as he put it, underlining the importance for him of those British government proposals. But the McInnesby family solicitor, Darren Mackin, here's what he had to say.
Today's ruling is a hugely significant ruling, not just for the McInnesby family, but for all victims of the conflict. The reality is, for 34 years, Mr. David Holden has peddled a lie. The judge today found that the account that he gave at the time and in these proceedings was untruthful and deliberately misleading. The reality is that it shouldn't take this long, but after 34 years, it's not only a victory for the Aidan McInnesby family, but it's also a victory for the rule of law that was abandoned all those years ago. And it sends a real message to the heart of the British government, who at this very moment in time are intent on removing cases such as this, removing truth and justice from families such as McInnesby family. The reality is this, in many ways, underlines the importance of the criminal justice system, and indeed to achieve justice even many years later.
Darren Mackin there. So what happens next, Barry?
David Holden has been remanded on bail to appear in court again here in Belfast for sentencing in the new year. However, he's likely to appeal even up to the Supreme Court. Some of Aidan McInnesby's family and friends, they plan to visit the memorial marking the spot where he was shot at Auchnacloy, as they comprehend the enormity of today's decision.
Barry Lenihan, thank you very much for joining us with that. And we will be speaking to Aidan's cousin, Brian Gormley, and also Amnesty International's Northern Ireland Deputy Director, Gráinne Taggart, about all of this a little later on. Now, as we've been discussing, former British soldier David Holden has been found guilty today of the manslaughter of Aidan McInnesby, who was shot dead as he walked through a checkpoint in Auchnacloy, County Tyrone, on his way to a GAA match in February 1988. Today's verdict is the culmination of a 34-year campaign by the family. And for more on all of this, we're joined now by Aidan's cousin, Brian Gormley, and by Gráinne Taggart, who is Amnesty International's Northern Ireland Deputy Director. And you're both very welcome to the programme today. Brian, I might come to yourself first. A really big day for you and your family. Your Aidan's cousin, and I know the family, as I said, have been spending almost 35 years at this point trying to get justice. How do you and the family feel today?
Well, good evening, Sarah. It's been a bitter, as we said at the court today, it's a bittersweet day for us in that we've achieved some level of success, and that we have got the court ruling that says that, and the judge is very emphatic in his statement today that David Houghton's version of events that happened 34 years ago was totally unbelievable. That's something that we would have felt this last 34 years, and probably that is the biggest reason why we pursued this campaign all this time. Really, as a family, what we were looking for is the truth about what happened on that day. We feel that we're a step closer to that truth. We don't think that it's exactly there at the minute, but we know that the version of events that the British Army, David Holden and others peddled at the time, there was an accidental shooting. I think we would feel that that isn't actually the true version of events on that day.
What has the last 34 years been like?
Well, it's been very tough on the family. Obviously, at the time of Aidan's killing, it was very traumatic on the family. I know it broke both John and Lizzie's heart. His mother and father's broke their hearts. John, in particular, would have found it very difficult to smile or have a bit of fun. He's always a very outgoing man. It really broke them. His sister, Eilish, would have been a very ardent campaigner. She would have been the main campaigner in those early years, whenever most other people, in all honesty, would have thought, well, what's the point? There's nothing we can do. We're up against the British state. This is a soldier. His story is going to be believed. There's very little we can do. Eilish, just because of the type of personality she was and the type of person she was, she refused to accept that that story could be peddled, and that she took it herself. So 20 years, campaigned very, very strong, went across the length and breadth of the country, travelled over England, different shows and stuff, and probably ultimately it led to her ill health, her own ill health. So it's been very, very stressful. It's been traumatic. There's been loads of highs and where you thought, oh, we're making progress, and then there's been loads of lows where you just think there's another barrier put up, there's another obstacle. You just sometimes it's very, very difficult to keep going. We're very lucky in that we're a very supportive network of family, and also the local community and other local organisations at different stages just give us wee lifts to keep us going at times. Mm.
I know you were only 16 when you were talking to Aidan for the last time, and during that last conversation he was talking about the harassment he'd been getting.
Yeah, well, I suppose it wasn't really in the court case this time, in the context of the shooting of Aidan McInnesby. Aidan McInnesby was known as the most harassed man in Ireland that time. There's actually newspaper articles on him where he was, every day he went through Auchnacloy checkpoint. He went across in the morning, came back in the evening time for his work on Monaghan Poultry Factory. He was just constantly harassed by the British Army. And I do remember that Christmas before Aidan was shot, he was down visiting my house, because the McInnesby siblings always would have kept, there'd been big killiers and went around visiting different houses and stuff. And I remember Aidan just telling about the story about how he was getting harassment. And I remember my own father, God rest him, saying to him, well, would you not need to see somebody? Can you not go? Is there nobody can do anything for you? And I just remember Aidan just lifting his hands, raising his hands and going, he says, there's nothing anybody can do. I've tried that. He says he's been with the bishop, he's been with Cardinal O'Fee, he went to different people, he says, but he just, there was nothing he could do at that stage.
So this morning then, given everything that's happened, as you waited for the verdict, I know you would obviously have been watching the trial and everything that happened very, very closely. Were you hopeful?
Well, Sarah, I was hopeful. I was, but I was also very cautious in terms of like any court case. You never know what's going to happen or what's going to transpire during the court case. I'm not, nor is any of the family profess to be, legal experts. We know that there's always different legal terms, legal terminology, that sometimes can mean that something's not admissible. But what we do know is when we watched the evidence and we followed the evidence in the case, in our minds we were very clear on what the outcome should be, the judgment should be today. And I have to say, I have to give huge credit to Justice O'Hara. I think Justice O'Hara managed the court case very well. He tried, I know, in difficult times during COVID and stuff. And I think his summary today and the statements that he made, I think that anybody who observed that couldn't disagree one bit with what he said.
Yeah, because he dismissed, he said Holden had given a deliberately false account of what had happened, that he was criminally culpable, and he found him guilty by gross negligence. And he was very strong in his dismissal of Holden's claim that his hands were wet from cleaning duties. What does that mean, Ryan, to yourself and the family, to have that said in court?
Well, I think what it does, it vindicates our stance over the last 34 years, which we have refused to believe the version of events that was given by the British Army, the British government, by David Holden at the time, that this shooting was an accidental shooting of Aidan McInnesby. We ought to still believe that, as I said, we're closer to the truth. I still think we're not totally at the truth yet. But the judge, and his summing up, he used a number of terminologies or statements. He talked about the implausibility of Aidan McInnesby being the only person on the road at that particular time. He talked of implausibility of the soldier just deciding to lift the gun at that particular time, that Aidan McInnesby was walking through the checkpoint. And don't forget, Aidan was almost 300 metres from the checkpoint when he was hit with that bullet. Now, for the chances of that happening to someone that you know has been threatened numerous occasions that he was going to be shot, someone you know that the person firing the shot or fired the shot actually was aware of this person and knew this person, for that one person to be in that one spot at that particular time, I think the judge's wording of implausible sums it up very nicely.
So just looking forward then, Brian, are you worried that the justice that you got today and your family got today could be denied to other families because of the proposed Troubles Bill?
Well, I don't think it should be just me that's worried that those other families aren't going to get a chance. I think society as a whole should be worried, and that are we saying that some people have impunity from prosecution because they wear a state uniform or because they know someone? That's not a justice system. I think all society, any right-minded person will say that everyone, every family deserves the same chance. And all we've asked for from the word go is, let's bring this to court. Let's you make your statement in court where it can be challenged, it can be tested. Then if the judge had decided today that David Holden was not guilty, then we still would have been going, well, we have got to court. That has been tested in court. And if the judge, making his legal determination, decides that he wasn't guilty, well, so be it. But most all our families are requesting, they should be getting the chance to present their case in court, in an open court.
Okay, Brian, stay with us if you don't mind, because we also have Gráinne Teggart from Amnesty International on the line, and you're welcome to the programme, Gráinne. Your reaction, firstly, to the judgment today?
Today's judgment is hugely significant, and I want to commend the McInnesby family for the very dignified way they have conducted their campaign for now nearly 35 years. You know, the judgment today was long overdue to the family, and, you know, finally, obviously, they have justice for Aidan. So today is obviously first and foremost about the family. But I suppose we can't ignore the context in which today's judgment comes, which is in the same week that the UK government continue to push through their Troubles Bill, which would permanently deny truth, justice and accountability to many other families. Our call would be to the UK Prime Minister that it's not too late to do the right thing and to drop this bill. It is wrong that the UK government is legislating to put certain people above the law and beyond accountability. And what we need to see is everyone having that same opportunity for justice that the trial here today, I think, so well demonstrates.
And yet that bill is due its second reading in the House of Lords on Wednesday next, and no sign of it being pulled.
Yes, so it has had actually a second reading this Wednesday, so just gone, and it's back then for consideration stage on the 12th and 14th of December. So at that stage, the UK government have indicated changes that they plan to make to the bill, but none of those changes actually are substantive. None of them actually take away from the main thrust of the bill, which is a de facto amnesty for very serious crimes that were committed during the conflict, whether that be manslaughter, murder or torture. So it is a very concerning position, obviously, that we find ourselves in with this legislation. The UK government, of course, is unilaterally acting on this matter. They've reneged on previous agreements with the Irish government. And that's an unacceptable way to obviously deal with what is a very sensitive an ongoing delicate peace settlement here. So it isn't too late for the UK government to pull back from where they are, and we would encourage them to do so.
If they don't, you're looking for the Irish government to take its own action on the Troubles Bill in the European Court of Human Rights.
Yes, if this bill becomes law, inevitably it will lead to legal challenge. We know that a number of victims are considering, obviously, challenging the bill because it is in flagrant breach of the UK's human rights obligations. It is unlawful. But it's not right that the burden for that challenge should solely fall to victims. We have called on the Irish government to take an interstate case, so to take the UK government to the European Court of Human Rights. And of course, that isn't without precedent. We've seen the Irish government do that before in relation to torture. So it is essential that this is to the fore in the Irish government's considerations as to how they plan to address this bill if it becomes law. And really, that is the only tool at their disposal. Now, I should say that, of course, the Irish government have been very clear and unequivocal in their opposition to this bill, and that is very welcome. But there obviously there needs to be a plan. So if this bill is pushed through and becomes law, what then? For many of the victims who have been fighting for decades for justice, you know, by the time they would go through the domestic courts under the UK Supreme Court and potentially eventually under the European Court, that will obviously take many years that some victims frankly don't have. The Irish government can go direct to the European Court of Human Rights, and they should absolutely do that.
And just finally on this then, Gráinne, if they did do that, what can the European Court of Human Rights, even if it fines against the UK government, what can they actually do?
They can issue a binding judgment that points out what we all already know, which is that the bill fails to discharge the UK's human rights obligations, and then the UK government would have to act then and address that binding judgment.
Okay, interesting, and it's interesting to see how it will all play out. Brian, just a final word to yourself on that. What do you think of what's likely to happen?
Well, I'm not sure what will happen, Sarah. I just know what should happen. I think that other families, this idea that the British government are going pushing through this legacy agreement or bill should be stopped. It's unfair. It's not right. Morally, it's not right. There's loads of victims out there, and they deserve the same justice as everyone else. And we need to remember, for whose purpose is this bill being pushed forward for? It is not for any member of the public in the North.
Okay, well, thank you both very much for joining us. That's Brian Gormley and Gráinne Teggart. We'll take a break.